दृष्ट्यायात आसीन मत स्नेह भवती नाम मरापना. Devotional service rendered to me by the living beings revives their eternal life. O my dear damsels of Braja, your affection for me is your good fortune, for it is the only means by which you have attained my favor. This verse is from the Srimad Bhagavatam. It is very important in understanding the internal nature of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is the verse that Krishna spoke to the gopis at the time of their meeting, the inhabitants. Lord Sri Krishna at Kurukshetra, Samanta Panchaka, during the solar eclipse. Kurukshetra is one of the very great holy places throughout the history of the Puranas. In Kurukshetra, Lord Parasuram performed his tapasya after defeating 22 generations of Kshatriyas. Kurukshetra is also the place where Bali Maharaj was performing his great sacrifice at the time when Vamana Dev approached him to beg for 3 steps of land. Kurukshetra is also the place of the great King Kuru. It was there that he engaged in great service to the Lord as well as to the Brahmins and the Vaishnavas. And of course, it was King Kuru who later on, his descendants, whose name is Kurus, and through his line of great kings, such great personalities as Maharaj Santanu, Bhishma, Dhritarashtra, Pandu, and ultimately the 5 Pandavas, Yudhisthira, Arjuna, Bhima, Nakula, Sahadeva. And it was on this place of Kurukshetra fate is very much difficult to understand. Kurukshetra is the land of King Kuru, the place he made famous by his tapasya and sacrifice for the betterment of mankind, that his own descendants came to the very place that he made holy by his devotional service to have a fratricidal war. Did you ever think of it this way? That all the children of the Kurus, Pandavas and the Kurus, are the 2 different families within the Kuru dynasty. They came on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. They came to the very place that their forefather made holy, to have a bloody and terrible war. But because this place is considered so sanctified. In the Bhagavad Gita first verse, we understand that Dhritarashtra was very much concerned because because it was being fought on such a holy place of pilgrimage, it was inevitable that those who were on the side of Dharma would be victorious. So it was here in Kurukshetra that Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita under that immortal banyan tree in the place called Jyotisar. It is here that Lord Sri Krishna displayed to Arjuna and to all the world the Virat Rupa, the universal form of the Lord. But just prior to this great battle, Krishna revealed something far greater than the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, and far greater than the Virat Rupa. He revealed to the world the glory, the love of the residents of Vrindavan. Because it was at that very same place that the kund of the name Samanta Panchaka that Krishna, who was then living in Dwarka, called the residents of Vrindavan to meet him on the excuse of going to observe the ceremony pertaining to the solar eclipse. Because since time immemorial, to the present day, many, many pilgrims go to Kurukshetra. It is considered the holiest place on all the earth to be during the time of the solar eclipse. For those of you who have been there is the Brahma Sarovar and the Samanta Panchak, very big, big kuns of water. In fact, it is today the largest man-made lake in all of Asia. And during the time of the solar eclipse, there are literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people taking their bath at that place, offering their prayers, having kirtan. So at the time, the gopis, they were living in separation from Krishna for such a long time. It was many, many decades. Perhaps it was about one century that they were living in separation of Sri Krishna. He left when he was 12 and a half years old. This event of the solar eclipse took place prior to the Battle of Kurukshetra. So it was about 100 years. They were simply living in the fire of separation. And now they were given the opportunity to see their beloved again. There are two types of ecstatic love, Sambhog and Vipralamba. Sambhog means love and meeting, and Vipralamba means love and separation. And of the two, some say Sambhog is higher, some say Vipralamba is higher. But actually, the two are completely interdependent on one another. One cannot exist without the other. Because without meeting, there can be no possibility of feeling the ecstasy of separation. And without the feeling of the ecstasy of separation, it doesn't really highlight the ecstasy of meeting. Huh? When you are separate from your beloved for a long time, the meeting again is something way beyond and higher than when you remain with such a person. Is it not true? Because of the anticipation. And similarly, that meeting energizes the sweetness of our relationship. And then again, when we are separated, the thoughts, the feelings, remembrances of that meeting is the only anything that keep us alive. So this is the mood of the residents of Vrindavan. Factually, if they did not feel the hope of meeting Krishna again, they could not survive the fire of separation. So in this way, Sambhog and Vipralamba are always together. In Vipralamba, there is always the meditation on the meeting. So, for so long, they were simply meditating on meeting Krishna again. It was their only hope. It was their only sustenance in life. So many of the Brijavasis, they did not sleep, they did not eat, they simply cried. After Krishna left Vrindavan, the gopis went to a place. Today that place is called Udhavakyari. They went to that place in the forest, which was very secluded. And they could not eat, they could not sleep. They simply laid on the ground and cried, day after day after day. For over 1 month, they just laid on the ground crying. They couldn't even speak anything but with choked voices. They would just cry out the name of Govinda. So Krishna, he sent Uddhava from Mathura. He went to that place where he met the gopis, after, of course, meeting Nanda, Yashoda, and the other residents of Braja. And there he realized that whatever love he thought he had for Krishna was so insignificant it practically did not even exist. He was famous as the best friend of Krishna. Practically everything Krishna did in Mathura and later on in Dwarka, all the personal affairs, he always performed them with Uddhava. He was considered the greatest devotee, the most dear servitor, and the best friend. In the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, Krishna says, there is no one, no friend more dear to me than you, Uddhava. So Uddhava was thinking, yes, like this. But when he saw that I'm with Krishna all of the time, and I thought I loved him, but when I see the love of the gopis and their separation, I understand that I have no love at all. So he prayed to be a blade of grass in Vrindavan, so that someday the gopis, or the servants of the gopis, or for that matter, any of the residents of Vrindavan, their love for Krishna was so deep, so great, that they may step on his head with their lotus feet. And then when Uddhava came back and explained to Krishna what he had witnessed and what he had realized, Krishna told him, actually, externally I sent you as a messenger to relieve the pain of the gopis by discussing me, and you were thinking that you had something to offer to the gopis, but internally it was not for their benefit, it was for your benefit that I sent you, because you had so much to learn from them of what the ecstasy of Brajadham really is, what the feelings of love really is in the mood of my most intimate confidential servitors, the damsels. So in this section of the Bhagavatam, we only get a hint of what type of love and separation was being felt by the residents of Braja. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains, from the moment Krishna left with Akrura for Mathura, the gopis, they cried incessantly for the rest of their lives. And daily, they would just almost helplessly somehow or other struggle to make some garlands, to make some food, something they would try, thinking that Krishna will come today. It was their own, the only thing that could pacify them from falling dead in the anguish of love and separation, was the hope of Sambhog, that Krishna will come tonight. If he comes any later than tonight, I cannot survive. But he promised he would return, so tonight he will return. And when the night would come and Krishna did not come, it is not that they went to sleep nicely, but they just cried, thinking, tomorrow night he will come. So this is how they spent their whole lives. So here they are getting a message that Krishna wants to meet them in Dwarka, I mean in Kurukshetra. Can you imagine the joy that was dancing in their hearts? Can you imagine as they were packing up their ox carts and preparing for the long journey to Kurukshetra, how they were thinking in their hearts that we will see Krishna again, we will hear his sweet voice again, we will hear his flute again. We will dance with him again. This was their expectations. We will see him again dancing, again loving exchanges and leelas. This expectation was bringing them just renewed life, and it was a revival in their heart. This anticipation growing moment after moment, second after second, minute after minute, hour after hour, day after day, was just growing and growing and growing and growing and growing continuously in their heart as they were traveling to Kurukshetra. And then when they finally arrived at Kurukshetra, the ultimate summum bonum of all their hopes in life, before them, Sri Krishna. But he was not the same Krishna. He was no longer carrying a flute. He was carrying the scepter of a great ruler. He was no longer with his beautiful lotus feet dancing through the forests of Braja, but he was seated on a massive decorated elephant. Not only that, but he had 16,108 queens, each one a goddess of fortune, standing beside him as a consort. There was no longer the wild flower of a giant garlands of Braja, the gunja, mala, but there was beautiful armor of gold, silver, jewelry. He was a king. He was not a gopa. He was a king. And the gopis were completely unsophisticated. Very simple. They had never seen anything like this before. They did not know how to relate to him. They did not know what to say to him. In fact, seeing Krishna in this way was such an utter devastation that all of their hopes, all of their anticipations that kept him living, kept them living for so many years, fructified in utter disillusionment. Now they could see. Sri Radharani prayed, "You are the same Krishna. I am the same Radharani. These are the same moonlit nights of the month of Chaitra. But I do not like to see you here with all these queens, with all this royal paraphernalia. I have no relationship with you in this regard. I want to see you again under the beautiful Kadamba tree on the banks of the Jamuna in the forests of Braja. Let me take you back there. And really, this, according to many great acharyas, was the most intensified moment of the devotee's love, the gopi's love, throughout their whole lila. It was when they were the most utterly helpless and hopeless, because now they had nothing else to live for. Everything they expected, the dream was crushed, smashed, finished. Krishna will never be like this again. Therefore, in their minds, in their hearts, in utter desperation, just to survive, they began to meditate on bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan. They felt so shy before such a great king that they could not ask him to come back to Vrindavan. So in their hearts, they constructed beautiful carts and brought Balaramji, Subhadra, and Krishna back to Vrindavan. And the meditation of the gopis in this regard, of bringing Krishna from Kurukshetra, his Dwarka Lila, to Braja, that is what is represented by the Rath Yatra in Jagannath Puri every year. And it is for this reason Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu externally, he went to Jagannath Puri because his mother did not want him to go to Vrindavan. She wanted to have him close by so she could hear news about him regularly. But internally, he actually went to Jagannath Puri because that is the place of the Rath Yatra. That is the place where the sweetest, most ecstatic feelings of love and separation were manifested by Srimati Radharani. And he was coming in the sweetness of the mood of the love of Sri Radharani. So Krishna, when he saw the gopis in this condition of life, he is the knower of everything. But even though he's the knower of everything, he could not fathom what was in the heart of Sri Radhika and the gopis at that time. The love was so much intensified, so supreme, that when Krishna saw them, even he was thinking, what is this ecstasy that they are feeling? What is this love that they are experiencing? What is the happiness and the nature of that love? So Krishna, in order to give them hope, he spoke these words. Mai bhaktir hi bhutanam amritat paiva kalpate drishtya yad asin mit sneho. Devotional service rendered to me by the living beings revives their eternal life. Oh, my dear damsels of Braja, your affection for me is your good fortune, for it is the only means by which you have attained my favor. Mata more putra bhave korina bandhan, atihina gyane kori lala na palan. Krishna's thinking. Mother sometimes binds me as her son. She nourishes and protects me, thinking me utterly helpless. Sakashudhak sakye kori skande arohana Tumi kon baraloka tumi ame sana. My friends climb on my shoulders in pure friendship, saying, what kind of big man are you? You and I are equal. Priya yadi mana kori kori ye bhasan. Vera stuti hoite hari. Ah, say more, man. If my beloved consort reproaches me in a sulky mood, that steals my mind from the reverent hymns of the Vedas. Esu da bhaktalaya kori mu avatar, kori bhavi vida vidha adbhuta vihar. Taking these pure devotees with me, I shall descend and sport in various wonderful ways, unknown even in Vaikuntha. I shall broadcast such pastimes by which even I am amazed. The influence of Yoga Maya will inspire the gopis with the sentiment that I am their paramour. In this way, Krishna decided to descend into this world, revealing the most confidential pastimes of Sri Vraja Dham. And in this chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is about to explain how the essence of the pastimes of Vrindavan was brought to the world by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The essence of all the avatars is Krishna. But it is explained that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the essence of Krishna. How is that? Because in Vaikuntha, in the spiritual world, the Lord is manifesting so many loving relationships with his devotees. In the mood of on reverence, of course. And all of the avatars are incarnations of the Lord of Vaikuntha in various forms according to time and circumstance. But in the 28th Divya Yuga, of the reign of Vaivashvat Manu, once every day of Brahma, Krishna so mercifully appears in his original form, descending from Goloka Vrindavan, to exhibit the five rasas, which no other incarnation manifests in full. He comes and brings Braja Dham with him to reveal the essence of all the spiritual world. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, that great avatar of Sri Krishna, into this world to reveal the essence of Braja. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is very, very carefully and systematically explaining how this is. He is the manifestation of the divine exchange of love between the internal potency and Krishna, who is the Shaktiman, who is the source and the basis of all transcendental potency. There is the Shakti and Shaktiman. And in this internal potency, there are three divisions: Sandini, Samvit, and Haladini. And this is a very, very important subject matter. Sri Jiva Goswami has very, very, very elaborately discussed this. Kaviraj Goswami also takes great pains to explain these three aspects of the internal potency very carefully. So tomorrow we will begin a careful study of these three divine potencies of the Lord, Sandini, Samvit, and Vadini. And to understand this, especially the Ladini Shakti,
some idea of the supreme glory of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's divine descent into this world. Is there any questions? Shastra, a serpent is dangerous, but when a serpent has a jewel on its head, it's even more dangerous. You've heard that example? So, if a person is appearing in a very, very high position, that person potentially is more dangerous than just an ordinary newcomer. Should not listen to gossips. In other words, if a person is talking bad about another devotee behind his back, how is that going to help anything? Huh? Why not go and try to help that person? We should be very, very careful not to hear from anybody this type of talk. If our spiritual master is pointing out certain things, we should not take that as something fault-finding. That is a warning to us to be careful of some things. But when other devotees are just baseless rumors, accusations, no matter who does says it, we should run for shelter to someone who can give us relief. Because what does Rupa Goswami say? Rupa Goswami explains that an advanced devotee, the symptom is he never finds faults in others. What is it that means? What does it mean to be an advanced devotee? If someone is a fault finder, he's not an advanced devotee. It doesn't matter what position he's in, right? Sometimes our devotees, even our acharyas, they will criticize Mayavadi to protect us. They will criticize Sahaja class to protect us. They will criticize gross materialists, politicians, scientists. Prabhupada says so many times I put about the boot of my foot on the face of the scientist. Does that mean he's not an advanced devotee? He's warning us because these particular classes of men we have to be very careful of. But we don't see advanced devotees criticizing their own godbrothers and godsisters in this way. warn us against dangerous elements.
This is very, very dangerous. It's politics.
Unfortunately, in all circles of life, politics is often a method used by people in high positions. The politics used by people in low positions is not very destructive, but when politics is used by people in high positions, then it's very destructive. So we should never listen to these things. And we should never be a part of it. Unless we want to invite Trinavarta to enter into our heart and just stir up all the dust, doubt, suspicion, and lack of faith, and then we lose all sight of Krishna consciousness. So be very careful. Life, before I even accepted Srila Prabhupada as my Gurudev, I went to Vrindavan. And I met one person who was in a very high position. And this person had ulterior motives. And I was just an innocent person, I didn't know. And he started criticizing Prabhupada like anything. And I wasn't even Prabhupada's disciple. I just inquired whether his guru had some relationship with Prabhupada, because I had met Prabhupada in Bombay. And he started saying all bad things. None of them were true. But he made them sound very true. Because he was very learned, he was an author of many books, he was also a sannyasi. And who was I? I wasn't an author of books or sannyasi. I was just a little teenager mendicant looking for God. I will tell you honestly, what I heard took many years to erase from my heart. Later on, I accepted Prabhupada as my Gurudev, wholeheartedly, but still, the scars of those wounds in my heart took years to heal. So we should not expose our spiritual life to such destructive forces. If someone says something about Devamrit, just ask me. Is that what we want you to think of him? If it's not, you shouldn't even hear these nonsense things, right? If you hear something about another devotee, is that what your actual authorities want you to think about that person, want you to hear about that person? If it is, they'll tell you. It's nobody's business to be finding faults. This is the quality of a person who is not an advanced devotee, according to the Bhaktivedanta Samrita Sutta. One of the first symptoms that you can understand an advanced devotee is his tendency to find faults is no longer. Because he's tasting the higher taste of glorifying Krishna. As I say, Prabhupada in his books, he finds faults with so many classes of men, but that's only for our protection. He doesn't find fault with other devotees. We're on the proper line.
This is all very dangerous. It is the Trinavarta whirlwind. It's politics. We have to be very simple, very sincere, very honest, very straightforward, and aspiring to be servants of the servants of the servants. If we're not like that, then we'll become political. It's the tendency of the Maya potency that is still somewhere within us. But if we're not striving to be the servant of the servant of the servant, then we're going to strive to be the Prabhu, the master. And in order to fulfill that, you have to start becoming political. Right? What does politics mean in this world? Politics means everyone wants a high position, and everyone's fighting for a high position. Isn't that what politics means? All this campaigning, voting, politicians. What is a politician? Someone who's fighting for a high position. Is that what it means, being a politician? Simplified. But isn't that what they're all doing? They'll say anything, they'll do anything to get that high position. That's a politician. Correct? That's material life. Material life is politics in that way. Everyone's striving for a high position and they'll say anything, do anything, cut anybody. In the presidential elections of the United States of America, what is basically the presidential election? They don't talk so much about policies. One side is just telling all the dirt about the other side, and the other side is telling all the dirt about the other side. Rather than talking about what they want to do for the people, they talk more about what a demon the other person is. Right? This is material politics. Push someone else down to bring yourself up. And what is spiritual life? Dasosmi. That I'm your servant. Das, das, anu, das. That I'm striving not to be high, I'm striving to be low. I'm striving to be the servant of the servant of the servant. I don't want distinction, I want service. Politicians, they don't want service, they want distinction. Devotee wants the service. He doesn't want any distinction. He doesn't care for these things. If they come, he tolerates, but he's not after any of those things. So you see, if you're not striving for the position of servant of the servant of the servant of the servant, honestly, with a simple heart, then this whole political tendency will rise in your heart. Huh? And you will find that people who talk all gossip and nonsense and rumors and everything, they are not people who are really striving to be the servant of the servant of the servant. They're people who like position, who want people to adore them. Huh? Who want to be a Prabhu, not a Das. Analyze. You'll find. That's always the case. Huh? So we have to grow up and understand what devotional service really means and who a real devotee really is. Offer all respects to all, whatever their categories. But internally, we must understand who to hear and who to be inspired by. And who to be careful of. Is that clear? You understand? Repeat to me what the formula is. One of his last addresses to all of his disciples before he left the world. This is one excerpt. I advise all to preach the teachings of Rupa Raghunath with all energy and resources. Our ultimate goal shall be to become the dust of the lotus feet of Sri Sri Rupa and Raghunath Goswamis. You should all work conjointly under the guidance of your spiritual master with a view to serve the absolute knowledge, the personality of Godhead. You should live somehow or other without any quarrel in this mortal world, only for the service of Godhead.
If you just offend a devotee or if you find faults, it's harmful for your spiritual life. But whenever we, in our everyday activities, we see that sometimes externally devotees may commit some kind of faults. And that way we can't tolerate it, then we just speak it out like anything. And it happens many times, even though we know that we should not commit offenses, we should always remain whatever he does, we should accept that is also, everything is perfect arrangements of Krishna. But still, he cannot.
The person is making a mistake, and you tell him how to do it correctly, that isn't finding fault. That is a different thing.
But I feel that I find faults, not.
Yeah, in other words, you should not nourish that tendency.